right, thanks for tuning in. You are listening to Gaucho Amigos. I'm Alex. Today, my guests are Chelsea and Katie Liu. But before I introduce them, I did want to make a quick announcement about the future of the podcast. So starting next week, Gaucho Amigos will become part of the FM Pods Network, okay? It's a brand new network, kind of a startup deal. I mean, right now it's basically a podcast network comprised entirely of Bob Dylan podcasts. I was invited to join, as I think they're kind of hoping to bring in some other kind of like-minded, or at least, you know, classic rock-minded podcasts. It's a brand new venture, but here's how it's going to work, at least for now. I'm still going to be posting episodes for free every week the way I've been doing it. So the way I've been posting episodes since week one, where you can get them for free on Apple or Spotify or wherever else you get podcasts, that's not going to change. So nothing in terms of how I've been sharing the podcast since the first episode will change. However, with FM Pods, you can subscribe to something called FM Plus. I believe it's $4.99 a month, and that gives you access to bonus content, not just for my podcast, but for all the podcasts across the network. So I'll be contributing to that bonus content as well. It'll probably be a Patreon-type deal where there will be like blog posts, extended episodes, and, you know, maybe the occasional bonus episode. I haven't figured that all out yet because this is all new for me. But I will say, if you've enjoyed Gaucho Amigo so far, I do encourage you to subscribe because basically it'll help keep things going. You know, to be honest, in terms of the time investment, this has been a bigger undertaking than I anticipated. So, you know, doing it for free and paying for the hosting fees and the Zoom fees out of pocket, you know, that wasn't really sustainable for much longer. So if you want to see Gaucho Amigos continue, you know, for the long term, the best way to do that is to subscribe to FM Plus. All right. I will have more info and details about this in the next few weeks, but I do want to introduce my guests today, Chelsea and Katie Liu. Now, a few months ago, Chelsea, who is a book critic for the New York Times and some other publications, she wrote a piece in the New Yorker called My Unlikely Connection to Steely Dan. It was a pretty big hit. It was, you know, making the rounds on Twitter, and people seemed to really like it. I really liked it. And that piece, you know, detailed her experience of her and her sister Katie just kind of becoming obsessed with Steely Dan as teenagers, growing up in this kind of sheltered California community. It was kind of a unique and somewhat anomalous perspective of Steely fandom. And, you know, that's kind of a focus of this podcast, is to bring in people who are from that kind of new millennial generation of Steely Dan fans. So, you know, I wanted to have them on the podcast to share their story. So without further ado, this is my conversation with Chelsea and Katie. Enjoy.
We were, you know, like being driven around by our parents. Well, actually, they mostly listened to classical music, but there was one classic rock station that they listened to. And we heard Do It Again this one time, and I think we were just kind of entranced by it for some reason. Like, it sounded a little different than everything else. And I think we just like went home, we looked up what the song was, and then we just like went and downloaded Steely Dan's entire discography. And
well, yeah, we were being driven around because, you know, we lived in like a suburb of LA, and that's just what you do if you can't drive. You're just...
Oh yeah, we were like 17 at this point.
Did you not get a driver's license for any particular reason? Because you're old enough at that point, right? I'm not.
Yeah. You know. I mean, we were like really sheltered kids. Yeah. I mean, like, yeah. We're like very like suburban, like our town was like super safe. I don't know. We just stayed at home and like, you know, did homework and like prepared for college.
Yeah. So, I mean, very risk averse children, like afraid of the road, not okay. Excited to be on it.
Okay, so you're living in the suburbs, you're being driven around, you're living this sheltered life, and then your parents are sometimes playing classic rock, but this one song, Do It Again, jumps out. Why that song of all? Because most teenagers, if they're listening to classic rock, it's going to be like, you know, and this was my experience as a teenager, because I didn't dig Steely Dan when I was that age. I dug like Led Zeppelin or Jimi Hendrix or Pink Floyd, you know, music that was kind of more like obviously cool or, you know, anti-authority. I don't know. Just it didn't. Yeah, for me, Steely Dan, and no one I knew really was listening to Steely Dan, like in the suburb. Like, why do you think that song? Do you know?
I mean, I think like we were not cool. Like, and we were like, I don't know, Katie and I have like talked about this before, but we're like not even like on the spectrum of like cool. And I think like even when we were in high school, we kind of like understood that and like maybe even embraced it. Like we were just not trying to be cool in any sense. Like that just wasn't who we were. But I think like Do It Again is like sort of cryptic and like it's kind of repetitive. We are not like brash or energetic. And a lot of like classic rock is kind of like, you know, super loud and like, you know, like screeching guitars or not that we didn't also like listen to that stuff too, but you know, Do It Again is not like that. And
I don't think we were really knowledgeable about like cultural associations with music. Like we didn't know that Steely Dan was like considered uncool or like bad rock or anything. Like we just heard this series of songs and you know one of them stuck out.
Yeah, but that's even more, it's almost even more interesting that way. Like you weren't like positioning yourself as, you know, being a sort of Steely Dan fan against these more popular classic rock bands. That just, you know, was the song that jumped out to you. You know, it's just like, it's interesting that, you know, that one is what did it. And now there's this whole, you know, kind of second wave of Steely Dan, but at the time, I feel like it didn't really exist. There wasn't Twitter. There wasn't this sort of youth energy around the band at that time at all. So,
no, not at all. Sorry, go
it
ahead.
Was like we were like discovering Steely Dan, like because I mean we had never heard of it. We barely knew anything about classic rock. Like Steely Dan was just like this weird, obscure, you know, band from the 70s that. Like even our parents didn't listen to.
When I was in high school, me and a lot of my friends would listen to classic rock, but within that there were bands that we thought like were the cool ones and the ones that were uncool. So like the cool ones were kind of the ones I was talking about, Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, Jimi Hendrix. But then there was like Steely Dan, like Yes is another one, who I also really love now. There's just, or like maybe Jethro Tull. I'm not as crazy about them, but I know some people really love that. Like in recent years, I feel like there's kind of been this growing acceptance of some of these less cool classic rock, you know, bands that were, you know, among, you know, kind of like our generation, I guess. I mean, I think I'm maybe a little bit older than you guys, but, you know, coming from a more like, I guess, millennial perspective, you said that your parents played you a lot of classical music. Is that possible? And maybe I'm reaching here, but is it possible that that somehow influenced you in getting into Steely Dan? Because I feel like of the classic rock bands, a lot of their songs are kind of more musically complex. They use like more interesting, you know, chord structures, and, you know, the melodies sometimes remind me a little bit more of something that you would hear in classical music versus, you know, rock or you know, more traditional like blues. Do you think that's a possibility at all? Because my background is also actually, I played viola growing up. I was in orchestra, and I don't know. I don't know if there's a connection there myself, but I've speculated a bit about that.
I think that there's something to that. Like I also play the viola in orchestra.
Really?
So yeah.
The violas are like the losers of the orchestra too. So maybe.
Well, I was unconcerned with how cool things were. So I was like, this is the right instrument for me. Yeah, but I mean, I think you're right. Like, you know, with Steely Dan songs, like you can listen to them over and over, and like each time you can hear something new. trying to think to listen more intently to details in the music, and I think that is kind of what makes Steely Dan rewarding.
I think a lot of like classic rock is actually, or back then I thought it was like kind of boring because it wasn't like as complex as, you know, like the classical music that we were like kind of steeped in. Like I played cello, like we like learned how to play piano for like more than 10 years. Like classical music was like just the extracurriculars that we did. And like, I think we were just like more used to listening to like complex music. Like we also like were really into Queen at some point, like before we started listening to Steely Dan. And like Queen is obviously also like really like densely arranged. So yeah, I think there's definitely something to that.
Yeah, Queen is more of the kind of symphonic, or you know, there's a big classical music influence. And there were quite a few bands in kind of like the early 70s, mid 70s that were more kind of classically driven. It's usually, you know, referred to as progressive rock. And I don't think that Steely Dan quite fits into that category, but I think there's, you know, on some of their songs, there's a little bit of overlap, especially on Asia. There's a little bit of a kind of progressive rock influence.
Probably our main non, like, you know, school or like extracurricular, like related hobby was just like tooling around on the internet, like listening to random music. Like that was just what we did for fun because, you know, we couldn't go anywhere. Like we didn't really have like other outlets, I guess. We just like hung out at home and like listened to random stuff on the internet. So I'm sure we like listen to some more Steely Dan before.
There's some connection here because, you know, I feel like Donald and Walter were also kind of famously shut in and kind of, you know, they socially isolated themselves. They weren't, you know, I mean, they played in bands and they played live, but like the live thing didn't last that long because I think they had trouble with that kind of whole social world of rock music. And, you know, then they just became kind of a studio band. In the later years. So
I think it is a similar, like a Don and Walt type vibe, like, you know, just like sitting at home, appreciating great music and not caring too much about that much else.
There was like this whole part that I wrote in the first draft of my piece, which was like four times as long as it was actually published at, but like,
oh, really? Wow.
Well, I mean, it's kind of a long story, but I cut it out myself.
Oh, you did? Okay.
After unsuccessfully pitching the super long essay to like multiple places.
Yeah.
Katie and I, like, I feel like we had like sort of like a, you know, Donald Fagen and Walter Becker like kind of dynamic where it's just like these two nerds at like Bard or like who just like come up with their own little projects and like, you know, have their own like super literary like inside jokes, like because we spent so much time at home, like just with each other. I mean, we're twins, so.
Oh, you are twins?
We're twins, yeah.
Oh, wow. I don't think I realized that.
We're not identical, but we were born at the same time. So.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah. That's interesting.
And we, I mean, we like, you know, obviously went to school, the same school, but like we went, you know, we were in the same classes. Like we were just always together.
Right. Wow, that's interesting. Yeah, and Donald and Walter were famously like inseparable, at least, you know, from kind of from Bard on.
I recall when I was small how I spent my days alone. The busy world was not for me, so I went and found my own. the garden wall with a candle in my hand. I'd hide inside a hole of rock and sand. On the stone in ancient hand.
Yeah, I feel like there was like a period after we graduated college where like we got into like the sort of like demo tapes or like sort of extra, like the second arrangement, you know, like lost songs.
The Bear.
The Bear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of speaks to this kind of, and this is what the internet has kind of opened up, is just kind of like, and you kind of talked about this in your article, Chelsea, is just the kind of tracking the references and the sort of trivia. Because I feel like that is something that really appeals to a certain type of Steely Dan fan. When did you start kind of getting even deeper in where you were tracking the, you know, offhanded references to Steely Dan in pop culture or in movies?
I think it just kind of happened organically. I mean, just like as a way that Chelsea and I communicate with each other, like whenever we see something that like references Steely Dan, or like just hear Steely Dan like playing in a restaurant or something, you know, you have to like text the other one. Say like, hey, like, yeah, like I was watching like Dairy Girls. It's like a series on Netflix, and they, in one of the episodes, there's a song that samples Steely Dan. And so I found the song and texted it to Chelsea, because, you know, it's like, oh, here is a Steely Dan sample that we have not heard before.
Yeah, finding Steely Dan like sampled in other songs is like extremely fun.
Yeah.
I think also Katie texted me once, like there was like this weird movie that like whose score was just like weird covers of,
oh,
like,
yeah, songs. It's Me, like, Myself, like, and Irene, right? Like the,
yeah.
And we
just like went through and listened to all of those. And some of
them, yeah, they're covers.
Some of them were not.
I haven't seen the movie. I know about the soundtrack, and I've listened to most of the Steely Dan. A couple of them are okay. Some of them are.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the cover of Only a Fool Would Say That is good. everything else, a little iffy, I feel like.
Yeah, apparently that's the one that got the Donald seal of approval, which is not easy to get. So apparently he said that he liked it, but and I think a couple of the other, I like kind of like. I think there's a Wilco one that's okay. I would have to look, but I do know that's what, yeah, it's one of those things. It's just like, what? Like this Jim Carrey movie from the late 90s has all Steely Dan covers? Like, what?
Exactly.
Like, I gotta go check this out. That, you know, it's just kind of this ongoing thing, the Steely Dan cinematic universe or something, that just it keeps expanding as you go through, you know, progress.
Yeah. Plus, once you're out as a Steely Dan fan, like, people will tell you about, like, the Steely Dan references that they come across.
It will become one of silence and sun. Only a fool would say that. A boy with a plan, a natural man.
Through the internet, and so you know, we found the Steely Dan dictionary, and yeah, I mean, like, we don't drink, like, we like can't drink, not that like in high school we were even doing any drinking. There was no way that we would have learned about any of this stuff, like through, unless it was like through the Steely Dan dictionary, like Hirschwasser, you know, like if I weren't a Steely Dan fan, like I still would not really know what that was.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, like when you listen to Steely Dan, the lyrics are not like the first thing you notice. They're not the first thing I noticed. I was drawn in by like the high audio quality and like, you know, the instruments and just the song. But, you know, after a while, you start to wonder, like, what does this mean? Like, you know, like I'm singing along to these words and I have no idea what they mean. And, you know, like the Steely Dan Dictionary is like a great decoder of, you know, all the weird like references, like the backstories behind some of the songs. Yeah, like, you know, they were into some like obscure things. It was a good way to learn like random bits of history.
Yeah, I feel like looking at the lyrics is like something that you do after like the fifth listen or something, you know?
I mean, sometimes you're unpleasantly surprised. Like, throughout a lot of songs, there's like a little bit of like a dark edge to them. Like, everyone's gone to the movies. Like, it's a little dark, even though it sounds perfectly cheerful. But, you know, at some point you wonder, like, what does this mean?
Especially as, like, you know, very sheltered teenagers living in the suburbs, like, what did you make of all, you know, these drug references? And I mean, to do that, I mean, I'm not saying that was the appeal for you, but did you, I mean, what'd you make of that? It was just like,
I think they just kind of seemed like stories. Like they were kind of removed because, yeah, I don't know. I think it didn't really matter. As long as the music sounded good. And honestly, it's like kind of hard to penetrate the lyrics anyway. So it's like, you know.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the music, I don't listen to music really for the lyrics. I'm not like, I'm drawn more to melody and arrangement and production. Again, I don't know if that's because of my classical background, but like I listen to a lot of instrumental music, and just like a lot of the times I'm zoning out. I'm not trying to unpack the meaning. Like, you know, I went on this other podcast called Jokerman, where basically what they do is they go like song by song, and it's almost like two English majors sitting there like unpacking the meanings. And they usually do Bob Dylan, but they're also Steely Dan fans. And I guested on some episodes where we did Steely Dan albums. And like, I had to kind of myself, someone who has done the account and has been very involved, I was like, okay, what are they, like Two Against Nature, the song? It's just a bizarre, I have no idea what, I still don't know what that song is about. It's just bizarre song. Yeah.
It is so scary. I think like Two Against Nature, I think, is like a terrifying album.
Yeah.
But, like,
too many
the song
freaks and weirdos Nature on that one. Yeah.
Isn't like, I mean, it's just like about like scary voodoo magic, right? Or
yeah. Yeah, like Madame Urzuli. I don't know. It's,
yeah.
I really don't know. I don't get that song at all. I don't know what it's about. I've never tried. Yeah. And there's obviously others, you know. But I think Gaucho,
I feel like
it's a little bit more clear. And, you know, Hey 19 or even Glamour Profession, they're like more coherent kind of stories that you can, I'm kind of playing a movie in my head while I'm listening to them. I know what's going on and who the characters are.
Yeah, that's true, actually. It's like, maybe Gaucho is like the high watermark of clarity in Steely Dan stories. Gaucho, like, it took me a while to get around to it, or like,
yep,
to come around to it. I remember like first hearing it and being kind of disappointed, because I think I hadn't adjusted to the kind of like sheen, like the sheer amount of production that is on that album, which I guess is true of Asia too, but it wasn't, it doesn't, didn't sound as processed as Gaucho does. So, you know, I think Gaucho is having a real, like, revival. And, you know, I've been listening to Gaucho more recently, and, like, yeah, like, it's a good album. Like, I like all the Steely Dan albums. I'm, like, starting to appreciate Gaucho more now. But, I mean, like, on the first go-round, I think I was more drawn to, like, some of the earlier stuff. I think because so it's more in, like, kind of the rock idiom and, like, pop. Like, the songs are short and they're concise, generally. I kind of like that you think it's a pop song or, like, a rock song that's got a little bit of weirdness to it. Like, it's a little bit uncanny. And I think I kind of like that. I think that's what drew me in. Like, you know, you think it's going to be a normal song, and then it's like, wait, something's off about this one. And I think I liked that.
Turn that heartbeat over again.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, that was like the song that we were really, really into.
Really? Turn that bar heartbeat? Wow.
Yeah. It solidified our fandom. Like, you know, we got into Steely Dan through Do It Again, but then we listened to the rest of Can't Buy Thrill, and the last song was the clincher.
Yeah. Which I mean, I feel like people don't really talk about, like, Turn That Heartbeat Over Again.
It's not one of the ones that the fans obsess over, because there's, like, the hits, and then there's kind of the fan obsessive, like, you know, Glamour Profession, or there's just a few that the fans tend to go nuts over because of maybe the references and, you know, in the lexicon of Steely Dan. The Glamour Profession, everybody's username is, like, you know, Jive Miguel or you know, Hoops McCann or whatever.
Yeah.
I think Dr. Wu, there's certain ones that are kind of the fan favorites. But I feel like even Turn the Heartbeat is not even among those. So it's an interesting thing.
Yeah, I don't know. But just, there's something about, like, you know, like, yeah, it just feel like, I think for me, it, like, paints a really vivid mental image, but I couldn't really tell you what that image is.
Were you playing this out loud in the house? Like, were your parents aware of some sort of Steely Dan thing going on? Like, what did they make of all this? I mean, or did they have any kind of reaction to it at all?
So yeah, we, like, usually what we would do is, like, we sat, like, side by side at our desks that were, like, you know, next to each other, and, like, we would, one of us would just play Steely Dan, like, out loud because we were usually, like, doing homework. So it was just, like, you could just hear it, like, throughout the house. And yeah, I mean, our parents were, like, bewildered. Like, they would just, like, you know, walk to our area and be like, what are you listening to? Like, this sounds terrible, you know? Yeah, but I mean, I feel like we were kind of always listening to weird music. So it was just sort of like a resigned sort of exclamation, instead of, like, they weren't, like, necessarily aware that, you know, Steely Dan fans were being born.
Yeah. So, I mean, after your piece came out, I'll say, like, we were talking to our parents, and, like, our dad was like, where did this Steely Dan, like, fandom come from? Like, why? Like, I think he did not retain any memory of this, like, very formative period in our lives.
Yep.
Like, he was like, I saw you guys every day in, like, for those years, and, like, I had no idea this was happening. And I think he was a little bit, like, alarmed.
He needs to open his ears. No, I'm kidding. But that's funny. Yeah, for them, it was just, like, whatever. Like, weird, our weird teenager daughters, like, being weird teenager daughters.
Yeah. I mean, they were also listening to, like, other classic rock. Like, they really liked the Eagles, I think. And
there's some overlap there.
Yeah. But we did not like the Eagles at all. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like them nearly. I mean, they're okay. I don't know. I'm fairly neutral on the Eagles. I don't have any kind of particular feelings. I find most of their stuff pretty boring. But were there, you said you were listening to other weird music. What were some of the other things you were listening to aside from Steely Dan at that time?
We were like really into like old electronic music.
Old electronic music? Like from what era?
Or like
how old
we
are we talking?
Well, we listened to a lot of Kraftwerk, in like I guess 1970s.
So like the early age of kind of electronic music.
Yeah. We
How'd you
listened
find
to
that? Because Kraftwerk is not a band that I think ever gets played on American radio. So, I mean, I know they're kind of legendary in certain circles, but how'd you find them? Internet also?
Probably. Yeah, it definitely wasn't from the radio. I'm not sure.
Well,
I mean, go ahead.
We were doing that senior project, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in our high school, we had to do like a kind of a senior project. And the thing that we did was to try to, well, learn the history of electronic music and compose a piece of it. So yeah, we got really into electronic music history for a while.
Electronic music history. So
yeah.
What were you reading? Like what other bit? Cause I also like a lot of that stuff. So I'm just curious if you don't mind this little tangent. Like I remember I had this compilation called, I think it's called Ohm, OHM, the early era. It's like a 2 CD compilation. It has like all the kind of like early experimentations with electronic music from, I don't know, Stockhausen and some of the, do you know, like Stockhausen or is that also part of it? I mean,
yeah, it was. Yeah.
It
like,
was.
I mean, you know, I guess it like started with the, like the early like electronic instruments, like the theremin and like the on Marnot, like, and then, you know, some of the like kind of classical, like experimental, like music, like Stockhausen, and like, oh my god, I'm blanking on like some of the other composers. Subotnick. Yeah.
Sorry, who?
Morton Subotnick.
Morton Subotnick. You were listening to Morton Subotnick?
A little bit, not a lot.
That's but, deep stuff.
Yeah, I mean.
So that, I mean,
that's
it's
what
so
we were...
it's so early. It's like primitive. I mean, it sounds like almost like primitive art in music form.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
I
cool
mean,
though.
It was the cutting edge, I guess. Like, but
oh
also
yeah, at the time, but it.
Back then, yeah.
Why do you think
you
you were
know?
attracted to the primitive era and not all the electronic stuff that was going on at the time? I mean, what drew you
Oh.
to that? Was it the
No,
weirdness of it, or the obscurity, or just the simplicity of it?
Well, I think it was the weirdness, but also we didn't stop there. We also went,
yeah, yeah.
like,
okay.
We also
were like
listened.
Kind of doing a survey, you know.
Yeah,
like, so we like, you know, it was like a chronological survey. So yeah, we like started with like, you know, like the early like sort of like classical like electronic experimentation, but then, you know, went on to like, you know, like the beginnings of techno in Detroit and like whatever, like house and
music.
Chicago.
Okay.
Yeah, so we did listen to like more than just like the weird ass like, you know, beeps.
Yeah.
And this was just between the two of you. You weren't like, you didn't have a crew of friends at school or something that you were like, yo, I got this Morton Subotnick shit. Like, check this out.
We had a crew, but we did not talk to them about music.
Okay, so this was your own kind of private thing.
It was, yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Did you ever, so did you have to compose a piece, you said, for the project?
Yeah, we did. I mean, we composed two, and one of them is very embarrassing. The other one is okay.
I don't even remember the first one.
It was called Tectonic because an earthquake happened.
That was the embarrassing one?
No, it was. It's the non-embarrassing one.
Okay.
The other one will not be named.
I don't even remember it.
Yeah, we
downloaded like Ableton, like, which was like $100, I think. And we just like sort of like played around in it.
The MIDI settings basically. Or did you have a keyboard?
No.
No.
They're just on the computer, like with the presets, right?
Yeah. We just like messed around with like the the interface. Yeah.
I mean, we were not very advanced. We did not know what we were doing at all.
Well, sometimes that's interesting stuff can come out of that sometimes. So then when you went off to school, did the Steely Dan thing stick or no?
Yeah, I mean, I think it did stick. Mostly it was just like replaying albums that we'd heard just over and over, but like attempting to persuade friends that this was good and Steely Dan were good, that nobody was convinced. And I mean, eventually we like went to our one and only Steely Dan concert. This was after college.
So we like basically listened to Steely Dan all through college too, although, you know, it was mostly re-listening. And I think at that point we also listened to The Nightfly and Two Against Nature. Like those were the two that we listened to during college for the first time. And then after college, we, you know, moved to the Bay Area together and, you know, like heard that Steely Dan was coming to play at like the Shoreline amphitheater. And so we like did this like crazy trek from Berkeley to, you know, the Shoreline amphitheater, which is like, you know, like an hour away. Then we just wanted to go buy some merch, you know.
And listen to Steely Dan.
And see them. Yeah. But I have like very little memory of actually like the actual concert. Like I think I was like a little alienated by it. Like the songs that they were playing, like I was like comparing them in my head to like the songs that, you know, like were recorded, which are, you know, the true songs. And I was like,
so you didn't like the live takes of the songs that much? They didn't.
Yeah, I was like, this is like a pale imitation of like thing. But I mean, I was happy that we went and got like a ton of Steely Dan branded stuff.
Yeah, I think I remember it more fondly. Like, or my experience was more like, I found the notebook where I like reflected on the Steely Dan live concert experience. And I said something like, it felt like the old and new again. Because, you know, we'd been obsessing with like the recorded version of these songs for so long. I wasn't trying to compare them to the recordings. It was like a kind of a weird experience for me to be around so many people who liked Steely Dan. Wow, this is new. Like, I didn't know there were so many people who liked Steely Dan as much as I do. I mean, not, and maybe this is because I wasn't alive in the 70s. You know, like, this obsession had been like a me and Chelsea thing. And then, like, all of a sudden, it's like, here's a packed amphitheater.
I think, I mean, I think I also was struck by that. Yeah, I think I might just be more antisocial than Katie.
So you finally saw them. And then fast forward to this piece in the New Yorker, Chelsea, how did you have the idea to do that?
So I was in grad school in 2021. So I was taking a class in grad school, and it was a personal essay class. And I was, you know, basically the piece started as like just like an assignment that I had to do. I was struggling to come up with an idea. And I think it was at that point that, like, you know, the Rolling Stone piece came out, actually, like that quoted you. And like, you know, there was a quote that was like, you know, like now that I've turned 30, like, I guess it's time to like start getting into Stephen. Yeah. And I was sort of struck by that because, you know, like Katie and I are millennials too. Like, we're young millennials, but we're still millennials. And I was like, that was not my experience at all. Like, we got into Steely Dan as teenagers. And I think, like, I just had this, like, really, I felt like I had, like, a really weird, like, experience, like, into Steely Dan that wasn't what was, like, reflected in the new, I guess, like, the new wave of interest. So I was just like, well, I just really love Steely Dan, and like, I just want to write this piece about it. The piece was long. It was like 2,500 words or something, but
yeah,
mostly just because that was how long I needed the piece to be for my assignment. Yeah, but it was like, I don't know, there were like more personal memories and like reflections on like Katie's and my like relationship, like in light of like, you know, like Don and Walt. And
oh yeah, what parallels did you draw there?
I mean, just, you know, just the ones that like I mentioned before, like,
yeah,
and we were both like also like two like shut-ins with the same weird sense of humor that like no one else got, you know, like we were always like embarking on like weird musical projects together.
I mean, that's one of the great things, I guess, about being a twin is that you always kind of have someone that you can, you know, share experiences with, who's kind of, you know, do like you agree with that or not?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I don't know what Katie thinks.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, so there was just like a lot more. There was like, I don't know, like stuff about like Walter Becker's death in like 2017, yeah, because I had like a really vivid memory of like where I was in Las Vegas. Yeah, anyway, but so I like,
what was that? What happened then? But like, you were just,
oh, kind of... It was just like, I was like dating this guy who was not like a very good person to date, I think. And we were in Vegas because he, like, I think he had a vision of like the good life that was sort of like not really well articulated. Like, he just, I don't know, we were in Vegas and I had no idea why.
You were living there or just visiting?
No, it was Labor Day weekend, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it was. He died on the day of my sister's wedding.
Oh my God.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I think it was the Sunday of Labor Day weekend. And I remember because she lives in San Francisco. So I was there. And I just remember being like, oh my, like, I couldn't process. Like, it was the worst possible timing because I couldn't process anything. I was just so, dealing with
family. Well, I wanted to know. Yeah.
Sorry.
I mean, it was like a big, well, yeah, I want to know where Katie was on that day, but I was in Vegas, like, feeling like, you know, kind of aimless, like, bad about my, like, crappy boyfriend, and, like, I just, like, got this, like, notification on my phone that was, like, you know, Walter Becker is dead, and I was just, like, wow, like, my life is, like, a Steely Dan song.
Did you feel like a piece of your childhood died or kind of thing? Or is that, or just something that was meaningful to you? Someone who was meaningful to you?
I think it was like, I think like most fans, like, I was like, this is like such a big deal and nobody will understand this except for Katie. I mean, obviously, like, you know, like the news alert was from like the New York Times or something, so clearly people like cared, but like, I like, for in like my personal life, I was like, you know, this is like a huge deal. And like, I just like didn't have anywhere to like put that. So
I mean, there was some outpouring, you know, even, you know, there was some celebrities that were sharing their, you know, RIP. I don't know. There was a bit of outpouring, but I guess if you don't know many Steely Dan fans in your life, or yeah, I can see how, you know, people wouldn't understand, you know, if you're a hard, you know, a Steely Dan enthusiast, and then yeah, for this to happen, and then it's just like, it's huge. Yeah. I don't know.
Katie, were you anywhere? Do you remember?
Yeah, Katie, what was your experience? Do you remember?
I don't remember. I mean, I think I was probably like in the office on the weekend, just like trying to work. And then I get a notification on my phone. I'm like, oh, that sucks. There's going to be no more Steely Dan.
Although there has been, kind of.
It's true. Yeah. I guess like no more Becker Fagan.
Yeah,
stuff.
Which is really what it is. But there's, you know.
Yeah.
It exists in some form.
Yeah. So I wasn't anywhere special or anything, but I was sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then did you pitch the piece to music sites first?
I did. Yeah, I like pitched it to Pitchfork. I guess that was the only music specific site. Like,
okay,
I pitched it to like The Guardian. I don't know. I mean, I just like didn't know where a piece like this would really fit, except maybe a music site. But I, you know, wasn't like not having very much luck pitching it for like a few months, and then I think I just like got frustrated and like cut out a bunch of the more like, I guess, like navel gazy stuff to me, and just sort of was like, well, I have nothing to lose, like I'll just pitch it to the New Yorker. So and was very surprised to like get an actual response.
Yeah, not too bad. The New Yorker. Was it in the print version too?
No.
Just online.
It was just online. Yeah.
Still the New Yorker. It's, you know, fairly prestigious. And yeah, I mean, a lot of people read it. I know. I saw like people were sharing and retweeting, and
this isn't like super important, but like,
yeah,
after the piece came out, like I got a ton of like notes from Steely Dan fans. I was just really struck by like how, like, how many people like felt the same sort of like yearning, and like that, you know, all the stuff that you've been talking about like how we're all sort of like introverted, like maybe like kind of like literary minded, or like, you know, literate, I guess, and just like introverted loners who are into really good music. And I think that really came through in like the responses that I got.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, like for reference, Chelsea has also done, like, she's written other pieces about other topics, and she also receives like, you know, letters from readers. And I guess I would assume that's how you like, you know, maybe those letters were not as well written. Like the reactions to your Steely Dan piece were like uniquely well considered.
Yeah, I think like reading the piece, like reading the emails that I got, I was just like, wow, like we're on the same wavelength. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like we like write the same way, or like that we think, the way we like articulate ourselves is like it's at a higher level, maybe. So I was like very heartened by that. Like I was like, yeah, we're all in this together, Steely Dan fans.
Yeah, even I got a little bit of that, and I did not write the piece. Was just mentioned in it. But you know, I also got like people who like messaged me and like followed me on Twitter.
Oh, great!
Just like saying like, hey, I also like Steely Dan, and you know, there's just like this great appetite for like Steely Dan fandom, which I think you see like in your Twitter account.